Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight grew up in Dearborn, Michigan, and earned graduate degrees in psychology, theology, and philosophy. At age 30, he joined the Society of Jesus, the Jesuits, and has devoted his life to serving the poorest of the poor. A car accident near a garbage dump in Guatemala in 1995 transformed his life. He's the founder and president of International Samaritan. And his name? Father Don Vitese. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Now back to Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're with the founder and president of the International Samaritan, Father Don Vitese. Father, welcome. An honor to have you.
Thank you, and I'm very happy to be here.
Can we start by talking about your childhood and your mom and your dad?
Okay. Well, I was born in the 40s in Detroit, actually, Highland Park. And my parents were ordinary Detroiters in that generation. My dad had his own building company. My mother was a housewife. We had six kids in our family. When I was very young, we moved out of the city and into Dearborn Heights, and then later on into Plymouth, Michigan. So we were, I think I could say, we were a family of the 50s that was a typical Catholic family, four boys, two girls, a station wagon with wood, and going to church every Sunday and to Catholic grade school and then on to Visitation High School in Detroit, 12th Street and Webb, where I graduated in 1964.
What were the biggest things your mom taught you, Father, and what were the biggest things your dad taught you?
Well, I think my dad taught me a lot about work ethic. And about every day doing something that was productive, either for the family or the community. And he used a word often that I don't hear much today, and it was duty. He would say it's your duty. He was a World War II veteran, and he came up in that the great generation. And that was important to him, duty to your church, your family, and your country. So I heard a lot about that as I was growing up. And, of course, he connected it to work translated into our duty translated into work for the family or the church or the community. I think my mother tried very hard to teach me patience. And I recall her oftentimes telling me to slow down and please be more patient. And it didn't work. But she did try that. I think she taught me respect for everybody. And it was a word that I think she used often. My father used duty. She used respect. And her idea was respect was for all people and all generations, old people, young people. So I think those were values passed on. Of course, great respect for the church. And great respect for the military.
You got a psychology degree from the University of Michigan. Mm-hmm. You go and you teach school. And then at age 30, you decide you want to become a priest, a Jesuit. Why?
Well, I had been, you know, God works through experiences and circumstances and all of the events in our lives. God's in everything. And the question is how is he communicating with each one of us? How does he manifest himself and ask us and invite us to participate with him in life? In my case, I think my childhood, my Catholic upbringing, created for me, as I said, a deep respect for the church and a desire to serve. Now, I didn't think about priesthood in my early days of life, certainly not during adolescence and during my 20s. But I worked with the Jesuits at University of Detroit High School and became very close to them and saw what they were doing. And it was a convergence of a time of life where you're wanting to make a commitment and you want to make decisions that are lifelong and life-lasting. And so, frankly, that experience, 4 years teaching at U of D High School, had a great impact. And as a result of that and other things, I made a decision to enter the Jesuits and never have looked back and never have had a bad day because of that decision.
While you were in the novitiate, one of the things the Jesuits told you to do was work with the prostitutes on the Cass Quarter.
Yes.
What did the prostitutes teach you, Father Vitis?
Well, you know, go back to my own mother. I learned respect for these people. And when the Jesuits allowed me to do, and this was, of course, late night ministry, and I was working with street women on the Cass Corridor with a Heartline program here in Detroit. And my goal was to invite these ladies to come out of that life and with an opportunity to get new job skills and to start over in a career that would be respectful and dignified and something they would be proud of for their own children, because many of them were mothers, single mothers. And I think I forgot your question.
No, that was the question. We're talking to Father Don Vitis. When we come back, we'll ask him about a car accident in Guatemala in 1995 and how it transformed his life. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Once again, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
Welcome back. We're with Father Don Vitis. Father, let's take us back to 1995, and you're in Guatemala.
Well, Jack, actually, the story begins earlier. It's probably 1985 when I was president of Boys Hope, Girls Hope International, and we were founding a home for street children in Guatemala City. And we got that going and a number of other projects for severely and chronically poor people in Guatemala and some other things. And then 10 years later, I was running St. John's High School, Jesuit High School in Toledo, Ohio. And I had given a talk to seniors about the importance of Christianity and leadership in life, and that they're connected, that Christians, by their baptism, have a right, a responsibility, and an opportunity to serve the world, and that the world is what we are to serve. We're Catholics, not just the family, not just the school, not just the city, but the world. And this was a bit of an abstract talk, but after I gave the talk, five seniors from the school came down to see me, and they said, we like what you said. We'd like to see the poverty areas and to see if there's some way we could participate in a broader world than just our world that we have right now. So the short story is they encouraged me to take them to visit this orphanage in Guatemala City, which I did. So we got into the city, and the first morning we were in a van driving to the orphanage, prepared to work with the children, and there was a car accident, and I don't know the details of that accident, but it was rather severe, and the morning traffic was all diverted in different directions, and our van went into the Guatemala City dump as part of the detour. What we saw was absolutely devastating. It was approximately 85 acres of human beings in enormous garbage piles, hundreds and hundreds of feet high, with smoke and fires and people feeding their pigs there, vultures with 5 and 6 inch wingspans, 6 foot wingspans, excuse me, people living there. And when I say
how
living,
many, Father?
Hundreds and thousands of people, not hundreds of thousands, but thousands of people were living there, men, women, and children. And they were recycling the garbage. It was absolutely pathetic. The we were stopped there. We couldn't move. We had to see this. We had the windows rolled down. The smoke was coming in because garbage dumps, urban garbage dumps in developing countries always have fires and smoke. And children were, we saw children fighting with dogs for food, and we saw vultures swiping down, coming down to swooping down to pick at the children. And it was horrid. The feelings were so strong that one of the youngsters vomited in the van. One of them couldn't talk at all, and we moved on. We were there about 20 minutes. And that evening, we had a prayer session, and we had conversation and reflection on that experience. And one of the youngsters said, well, what are we going to do? What's the next step? Is there something we can do? Anything we can do? And, of course, I didn't know, and I didn't have an answer. They also wanted to know why it was like that. Who allows this? Why does God allow this? And my answer to that was God doesn't allow that. That's not a natural disaster. We allow that. Somebody, the people here, the government here, the people here are allowing that. And that means we can do something about it. And so we left there with the challenge to do something for these people in the future. And frankly, that was the beginning of International Samaritan. That day, that experience was a time that I would mark as the beginning of this, the impetus for it.
If you would describe for us what it's like to live for a day in the garbage dump, either for an adult or a child.
Well, the children will be close to the parent, the mother. Usually it's a single mom or a single dad. They're not usually families live there, but they don't all work together as a family. They work in different areas of the dump. And for the, let's say the mother, she will have a child on her back carrying one, an infant, and then she may have a couple of younger ones around her helping her. They're cutting their hands because there are so many sharp items, cut glass and tin in the dump. We provide gloves for them if they're going to work there. There's smoke. They're coughing because of the fires, and they're looking for plastics. They're looking for tin. They're looking for tossed away appliances that they might be able to fix, something that's that has monetary value. And they will then gather that up, and at the end of the day, they will sell that, whatever it is. It could be rubber. Again, it could be plastic, tin, and they will sell it to someone outside of the garbage dump who will then take it to another place for processing.
15 years later, through your efforts, first God's direction, your efforts, supporters, volunteers, staff, what's changed?
What's changed in Guatemala City is that garbage dump now has a wall around it and protection. We have ways of putting out fires. We built a nursery for the children, and that nursery accommodates about 400 children. We built a grade school and a medical center. We're in the process of building a high school, that high, what would be called a Basico, and that will be finished about a year from now. We have built over 400 individual homes that would accommodate a couple of thousand people, families, out of the garbage into the housing. Now, not all of them, but many of them are out of, are having homes. And we have food programs. We have, of course, education now for the children. And we managed to get a law passed in Guatemala City with the help of the mayor to make it illegal to have children under the age of 10 in the garbage dump. And that's big progress there. Now, it's not completely enforced, but you're asking me, how is it any different today? Now, of course, we went from that garbage dump to El Salvador and Honduras, doing similar programs and services. And we've gone off to Cairo, Egypt, and we are in Haiti. And we are also in Panama. So we've focused our mission in two areas. One, direct service to garbage dump dwellers in developing countries, anywhere in the world that we can go. And we're looking at Sierra Leone, which is the poorest country in that part of the world, just as Haiti is the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere. The other part of the mission, which is equally important, is to people in this country, travelers. We bring people on mission trips. Every month we have groups going on mission trips, and 10, 12, 15 college students, fraternities, sororities, rotaries, schools, churches. So if there are people out there listening and they have members of churches, schools, rotaries who want to do this, they should call our office in Ann Arbor. We have full-time people working to arrange these mission trips, consciousness raising. And I will tell you something. We have strong evidence that the experiences really transform human hearts. It makes an enormous difference when people come and see for themselves this level of poverty.
What's the website?
The website is intsamaritan.org. That's intsamaritan.org. And if you want to call, it's area code 734-222-0701. That's area code 734-222-0701 in Ann Arbor.
We're talking to Father Don Battis, and I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back to Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Now, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
We're talking to Father Don Battis, the founder and president of International Samaritan. Father, for most of us, garbage dump people we've seen in Slumdog Millionaire, and now for the last 2.5 weeks, we've seen horrific scenes from Haiti. Try to describe for us poverty in America versus poverty that you see in these garbage dumps.
Okay, Jack, one of the standard ways United Nations talks about poverty is how much daily wage a person would have. And they measure it that way. That would be severe poverty would be less than, I think, $600 a year. And chronic poverty means it's gone on for generations. Now, in the developing countries like Haiti and the places where we are, I don't define it that way. I could. It could be less than $600 a year, or the garbage dump dweller is doing well if he's making $3 a day. That's a very good day. But I don't think that's the way I see poverty in severe chronic cases. What I see, and the difference between our country and those countries, is that it's about services and resources. For example, here in Detroit and every other major city in our country, if you are homeless, there's a shelter. There's somewhere, there is a shelter, or there's a county shelter, or there's a city shelter. If you are sick, you can go to an emergency room, and they will take you in. You don't have the best medical service, and if you go to the shelter, you don't have the best housing. And if you go to the soup kitchen and the food programs, you may not get the best food. In the developing countries, none of those resources are there. And you have public education here, and you can criticize it if you want, but it is free. Education is free in our country. They don't have free education in these developing countries. So I see the opportunities we have for our poor people, and we have poor people, and I'm sympathetic to that. But the differences are enormous. They don't have. That's why we build a medical center. They don't have them. They have no recourse. They have no food programs. They have no public housing. They don't have shelters that are sponsored by the government. So I'm going to tell you that a main distinction between poverty in the United States, which, by the way, the United Nations doesn't recognize our level of poverty as severe and chronic. It might be chronic, but it's not severe. Not having the resources and the opportunities. We try to do that. That's what we're trying to do with this population of garbage dump dwellers, to provide nurseries for their children while they're recycling, to change the conditions in the actual garbage dump so they're less inhumane, and to provide medical brigades, medical services for them, to provide education for them, and housing. We are trying to do as much as we can, including microloans, for as many as we can, as quickly as we can. We're limited by our resources, our own resources.
We're talking to Father Don Vatese, the founder, president of International Samaritan. Website, intsamaritan.org. You've built hundreds of housing units for these people. Describe for us housing unit for a family.
They're a little different in each place, but they're more alike than they are different, and they would be block homes with a small kitchen, living room area, and then two bedrooms, one for the parents, one for the children, and a bathroom that wouldn't be more than 3 by 4. And it would include a shower where you could also wash your hands. So there's no sink to wash your hands. And of course a toilet. So they would have running water, they would have electricity, and they would have three rooms and then a small bathroom. And we would do that in approximately 520 square feet of block. And those homes can cost us anywhere from $4,000 or $5,000 up to $7,000, and they would accommodate, on average, about 5 or 6 people.
You've raised millions, and currently, you have a challenge grant out there, a 2-for-1. Tell us about that.
We have a very generous donor who last Christmas told us that for every dollar up to $2 million, he would give us 50 cents. So any of our listeners here, if you send us $1, that $1 is worth $1.50. And that is a good challenge up until April the 15th of this year. So we have a few months yet to go. I encourage anybody who wants to make a difference to take advantage of this, because it's a wonderful investment. You give a dollar, we get $1.50 to help these poorest people in the world.
You talked in an earlier segment that you take people there. And I know that on April 26th, you're going to Honduras, June 4th, a trip to Cairo, September 22nd, a trip to Honduras again. There's others. Why take people there?
I think my main reason is the same reason I went myself, and what I experienced and what I see the young people, especially, although it's not all young people who go, it's all ages. It's transformation of heart. What happens almost always is life's change through these kind of radical experiences. Your whole paradigm and way of interpreting life shifts, and it shifts radically. What I find is we become more compassionate. We become more respectful of the poor because we begin to see it isn't their fault 95% of the time. And that's a big change in the way people often think about poor people. We have a tendency to blame people. We have a tendency to blame the victims. I see that changing. When they see how hard they work and what they are working with and for, they're no longer saying, oh, they're lazy and that's why they're poor, or they're stupid and that's why they're poor. The schools we run have wonderful success. And what I'm seeing is transformation of heart is what I'm hoping for, and frankly, what we're getting with our travelers. We've had over 1,000 people go on trips, and I have never had anyone sorry that he or she went. And again, it's all ages that go. Primarily, it's students, but it's all ages go, and families go. I will tell you something. We had a family from Ann Arbor, Michigan, 1 year ago, said, we're not going to go skiing in Colorado. Our family is going to go to Honduras and work with these garbage dump people. And they did. And the children didn't want to go. They wanted to go skiing. The parents made them go. It turned out to be a wonderfully transformational experience. And I think the parents would say that investment in their child's future was much greater than skiing or going to the beach.
In researching for the show, I read some quotes from people who have gone. And one I'd like to read is, quote, I got more than I gave. I was changed more than I changed. I helped, but I was helped more. And if you go to intsamaritan.org, you can find out all about it. And I'm Jack Krasula, and we're with Father Don Batiste. And this is Anything is Possible on WJR, the voice of the Great Lakes.
Anything is Possible with Jack Krasula on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back with Father Don Batiste, who's famous for a lot of things, but a couple of his sayings. I quote, they need us, but we need them more. That's number one. And number two, if not us, who? If not now, when? I mean, that's like Tom Dooley kind of stuff, Father. Talk to us about those two sayings.
Well, you know, if not now, when is something I find what I tend to do, and I think maybe many of the listeners tend to do, is we see something like Haiti, and we say, I want to do something, and there's an urge to do it. And then what happens is we just don't do it. We find blocks or excuses or reasons, and we say, well, I'll do it later. I will do it, but I'll do it later. And when I saw what I saw, I decided that too much of my life had gone by that I used that excuse that I'll do it later. I'll do it later. I think we need to act, of course, with reflection and prayer, but we need to act sooner as opposed to later. And to get into the arena and do something. And I would say do almost anything because then you start learning what works, what doesn't work, what helps, what does not help. You have to make mistakes, as we all do. But I think one of the biggest mistakes is to do nothing. God does not call us often to just do nothing. And that's why I say, if not now, when? What does it take? What does it take for any of us to engage and help? And if it isn't us, who is it going to be? This is the story of the Good Samaritan. We walk by, we see, and we leave it to somebody else. And it's unfortunate because there are many, many opportunities that are life-giving to us if we took those opportunities that God puts in front of us. And I think this is one of them. who's ever listening to this, this is one of them. God asks us, invites us to participate in creation, in service to humanity. And that's one of the ways we get life. That's how we get spiritual life, by growing in our generosity. So if it's not us, well, who is it going to be? I don't think we should look at governments. We are the government. I mean, we are the people. And if we rely only on elected officials, I don't think we're going to get too far. And what we are going to get, while we do need to have it, is a less human delivery of the services. And with, for example, Jesuit organizations and Catholic organizations, I think you get more humanity, and I think you get more accountability. A lot of times right now we have people wanting to know, what can they do for Haiti? What can they do for people in garbage dumps in developing countries? And that's a good inclination. It needs to be followed. What I think, if the next step could be, is to move towards a private organization, your school, your church, International Samaritan, and find out from them how you can participate in charitable actions, service to the poor.
You've worked with the poorest of the poor. What's the biggest things they've taught you, Father Don Vitis? Mm-hmm.
Well, I think one of the things I have learned is the level of perseverance that these people have. When I see young moms in garbage dump communities taking candles and burning maggots and lice from their children, and then cleaning out their hovels to the wee hours of the night, and then the following morning going out and selling flowers on the streets, and then going into the garbage dump, what I see is great perseverance. And I see that a lot back to, frankly, my father's value on work ethic to me. So I think they've taught me that. They've certainly taught me community in this sense. They're very generous with what little they have. They are willing to give. I had a man follow me around in one of the garbage dumps with a little cup of water. And clean water, safe water, is hard to find there. But he wanted to share it with me. Now, this man had no teeth. He had open sores. He had no shoes. But he wanted to share his water with me. And I think, he knew I was a priest. And he was inspired by the fact that I came with other people to help them, and he wanted to give something to me. So I find their generosity and their diligence and perseverance inspiring to me personally.
You go to one of these dumps, and the need is unbelievable. And you can only, it's like a drop in the ocean.
Yeah.
How do you keep doing it, and why don't you just say... It's overwhelming. I can't make a difference.
Well, you can make a difference. And the way I keep doing it is because I know enough about individuals. When you look at the numbers, hundreds of thousands or even millions, if you look at the world situation, or billions living in this kind of poverty, you can be overwhelmed. I think that's a temptation. I think that's not of God. I think what's of God is when you look at the individual, they're all persons, individual persons. When you start thinking of numbers, I think you're going to be in trouble. So I know some of them. I know the recipients of some of the people who have received, some of the people who have received homes, and the difference it's made in their lives. It makes an enormous difference for those who receive the services. And can you imagine yourself going from not having a home, living with pigs, and then having one of these homes, or not having food, or not having medical attention, and then having it? You have to look at it from your own personal point of view. How would it affect you?
What's the biggest things you admire about Mother Teresa?
Well, I think one of the things I admire about Mother Teresa is the fact that her reliance was on God. And her spirituality was also one of a persevering spirituality, that she was going to be, she was determined to do the mission she felt God inspired her to do in her life. And she never, she was unrelenting in doing it. She never gave in. She never gave up.
Last question. What advice would you leave our listeners with tonight, Father Don Vitese?
For all the listeners, I would say this is an opportunity. I am personally inviting you to help us, either with a dollar, $10. No gift is too small. No gift is too large. Money helps here. And we are a Jesuit-sponsored, founded organization. So it's about as safe as it's going to get in terms of delivery to the people you want it to be delivered to. We have trips going every month. Why not talk to your school, your university, your fraternity, your sorority, your parish, your Rotary, and ask them to contact us with you to arrange a service learning trip, a mission trip. I think what will happen is you'll have a transformation of heart. You'll help people, and you will be greatly helped yourself.
And the way you find out more is?
intsamaritan.org, or call us in Ann Arbor, area code 734-222-0701. Our address is 614 South Ashley, Ann Arbor, 48103.
Father Don Vitese, when you meet your maker, he's going to say, your dad taught you about duty, and son, you did. You passed on that grade. Thanks for all you do. Please keep it up.
You're welcome. I hope you have me back.
Our guest next Sunday will be Jack Lengel, the Marshall football coach who resurrected the program, and Matthew McConaughey played him in the 2006 movie We Are Marshall. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening. And make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Stop.